Chapter 30. The First Cup.
"I do not understand this," Elaine protested. She had not been offered a chair. In fact, when she started to sit, she'd been told curtly to remain standing. Five sets of eyes were focused on her, five women with set, grim faces.
"You are behaving as if we've done something terrible, when what we have done is find the bowl of the winds."
At least they were on the brink of it, she hoped. The message Nalesian had come running back with was none too clear. Matt had gone off shouting that he had found it, or something very like, Nalesian allowed. The longer he talked, the more he bounced between absolute certainty and doubt. Birgitta had remained watching Rihanna's house. She seemed to be sweaty and bored. In any case, matters were in motion. Elaine wondered how Nynaeve was getting on. Better than herself, she hoped. She had certainly never expected this when she revealed their success.
"You have endangered a secret kept close by every woman to wear the shawl for over 2,000 years.
Marilla sat stiff-backed, serenity almost abandoned, on the tight-lipped brink of apoplexy.
"You must have been insane. Only madness could excuse this."
"What secret?" Elaine demanded. Van Deen, flanking Marilla with her sister, adjusted pale green silk skirts irritably and said,
"Time enough for that when you've been properly raised, child. I thought you had some sense."
Adelius, in a dark gray wool with deep brown trim, nodded, mirroring Van Deen's disapproval.
"The child cannot be faulted for revealing a secret she did not know,"
Kariana Franci said from Elaine's left, shifting her bulk in her green and gilt armchair. She was not stout, but almost, with shoulders as wide and arms as thick as most men.
"Tower law does not allow for excuses," Saritha put in quickly, in somewhat self-important tones, her normally inquisitive brown eyes stern.
"Once mere excuses are allowed, inevitably lesser and lesser excuses will become acceptable, until law itself is gone."
Her high-backed chair stood to the right. Only she wore her shawl, but Marilla's sitting room had been arranged as a court, though no one called it that. So far, no one had. Marilla, Adelius, and Van Deen confronted Elaine like judges. Saritha's chair was placed where the seat of rebuke would be, and Kariana's the seat of pardon. But the Damani Green, who would have been her defender, nodded thoughtfully, as the Tyron Brown, who would have been her prosecutor, continued.
"She has admitted guilt from her own mouth. I recommend that the child be confined to the palace until we leave, with some good hard work to occupy her mind and her hands. I also recommend a firm dose of the slipper at regular intervals to remind her not to go behind sisters' backs. And the same for Nynaeve, as soon as she can be found."
Elaine swallowed. Confined? Perhaps they did not need to name this a trial for it to be one. Saritha might not yet have achieved the ageless face, but the weight of the other women's years pressed at Elaine. Adelius and Van Deen, with their hair nearly all white, even their ageless faces echoing years. Marilla's hair was glossy black, yet Elaine would not have been surprised to learn she had worn the shawl as long or longer than most women not Aes Sedai lived. For that matter, Kariana might have as well. Not one of them approached her own strength and the power, but all that experience as Aes Sedai, all that knowledge, all that authority. A heavy reminder that she was only 18 and had been in Novice White a year ago. Kariana made no move to rebut Saritha's suggestions. Perhaps she best go on defending herself.
"Plainly this secret you speak of has something to do with the circle, but
the kin are no concern of yours, child," Marilla broke in sharply. Drawing a deep breath, she smoothed gold-slashed skirts of silvery gray.
"I propose to pass sentence," she said in a cold voice.
"I concur and defer to your decision," Adelius said. She gave Elaine a disappointed frown and shook her head.
Van Deen waved her hand dismissively. "I concur and defer, but I agree with the seat of rebuke."
Kariana's look might have contained a sliver of sympathy. Maybe a sliver.
Marilla opened her mouth. The timid knock at the door sounded quite loud in the momentary thunderous silence.
"What under the light?" Marilla muttered angrily. "I told Paul not to let anyone disturb us. Kariana?"
Not the youngest, but the lowest in strength, Kariana stood and glided to the door. Despite her heft, she always moved like a swan. It was Paul herself, Marilla's maid, who popped in curtsying left and right. A slender, gray-haired woman, usually possessed of a dignity to rival that of her mistress, she wore an anxious frown now, as well she might, barging in after Marilla's instructions. Elaine had not been so glad to see anyone since Matt Cawthon appeared in the Stone of Tyr. A horrendous thought. If Avienda did not say she had met Toe sufficiently soon, she might just see if asking the man to beat her after all could end the agony.
"The Queen brought this herself,"
Paul announced breathily, proffering a letter sealed with a large red lump of wax.
"She said if I didn't give it to Elaine right away, she'd bring it in herself. She said it's about the child's mother."
Elaine almost ground her teeth. The sisters' serving women had all picked up their mistress's way of talking about Nynaeve and her, if seldom where they could hear. Furious, she snatched the letter without waiting for Marilla to say she could, if that was what she would have said, and broke the seal with her thumb.
"My Lady Elaine, I greet the daughter heir of Andor with joyous news. I have but just learned that your mother, Queen Morghese, lives, and is at present the guest of Padrone Nile in Amador, and wishes above all to be reunited with you, so that you may return to Andor together in triumph. I offer escort through the bandits now infesting Altara, so that you may reach your mother's side in safety and all speed. Forgive these few poor words, scribbled in haste, but I know you would wish to learn the wondrous news as soon as possible. Until I can leave you at your mother's side. Sealed in the light. Jaqim Carradine."
The paper crumpled in her fist.
How dare he?
The pain of her mother's death, without even a body to be buried, was only beginning to fade, and Carradine dared mock her this way? Embracing the true source, she hurled the foul lies away from her and channeled. Fire flared in midair, so hot that only a dust of ash fell to the blue and gold floor tiles.
That for Jaqim Carradine! And as for these women!
The pride of 1,000 years of Andoran queens put steel into her backbone. Marilla surged to her feet.
You were not given permission to channel. You will release the...
Leave us, Paul, Elaine said.
Now!
The serving woman stared, but Elaine's mother had taught her well the voice of command, the voice of a queen from her throne. Paul bobbed a curtsy and was moving before she realized. Once underway, she hesitated only an instant before hurrying out and closing the door behind her. Whatever was about to happen, plainly, was for Aes Sedai alone.
"What has gotten into you, child?"
Pure fury submerged the remnants of Marilla's regathered calm.
"Release the source immediately, or I vow I'll fetch a slipper myself this minute."
"I am Aes Sedai."
The words came out like winter stone, and Elaine meant them to. Carradine's lies, and these women.
Marilla threatened to slipper her? They would acknowledge her rightful place as a sister. She and Nynaeve had found the bowl, as good as, anyway, and the arrangements for its use were underway.
"You propose to punish me for endangering a secret apparently known only to sisters, but no one bothered to tell me this secret when I attained the shawl. You suggest punishing me like a novice or accepted, but I am Aes Sedai. I was raised to the shawl by Egwene Alvear, the Armorlin you claim to serve. If you deny that Nynaeve and I are Aes Sedai, then you deny the Armorlin seat who sent me to find the Bowl of the Winds, which we have done. I will not have it.
I call you to account, Marilla Siandevin. Submit to the will of the Ammerlin seat, or I will call judgment on you as a rebellious traitor.
Marilla's eyes bulged, and her mouth hung open, but she appeared composed beside Kariana or Saritha, who looked about to choke to death on incredulity. Van Deen seemed mildly taken aback, a thoughtful finger pressed to her lips beneath slightly widened eyes, while Adelia sat forward, studying Elaine as if seeing her for the first time. Channeling, Elaine floated one of the tall armchairs to her and sat, composing her skirts. "You may as well sit, too, Marilla." She still used the voice of command. Apparently it was the only way to make them listen, but she was startled when Marilla actually sank back down slowly, staring at her pop-eyed. Outside, she maintained a calm, cool facade, but inside anger bubbled. No, it boiled. Secrets. She'd always thought Aes Sedai kept too many secrets, even from each other. Especially from each other. True, she kept some herself, but only at necessity, and not from anyone who needed to know. And these women had thought to punish her. Your authority comes from the Hall of the Tower, Marilla. Nynaeve's and mine from the Ammerlin seat. Ours supersedes yours. From now on, you will take your instructions from Nynaeve or me. We will, of course, listen carefully to any advice you might offer. She had thought Marilla's eyes bulged before, but now...
Impossible! The Grey spluttered. You are... Marilla, Elaine said sharply, leaning forward. Do you still deny the authority of your Ammerlin? Do you still dare?
Marilla's mouth worked soundlessly. She wet her lips. She shook her head jerkily. Elaine felt a thrill of exultation. All that about Marilla taking direction was stuff and nonsense, of course, but she would be acknowledged. Tom and her mother both said you must begin by asking for 10 to get 1. Still, that was not enough to damp her anger. She had half a mind to fetch a slipper herself and see how far she could push this. Except that would shatter everything. They would remember her age fast enough then, and how short a time ago she had put off a novice dress. They might even begin thinking of her as a foolish child again, which thought stoked her fury anew. But she contented herself with, "While you think quietly on what else I should be told as Aes Sedai, Marilla, Adelius and Van Deen will instruct me in this secret I endangered. Do you mean to tell me the Tower has known of the Circle, these kin, as you call them, all along?" Poor Rihanna, and her hopes to avoid Aes Sedai notice.
"As near as they could make themselves come to sisters, I suppose,"
Van Deen replied, carefully. She studied Elaine as intently as her sister did now. Though a Green, she had many of the same mannerisms as Adelius. Kariana and Saritha looked stunned, disbelieving eyes swinging from a silent, red-cheeked Marilla to Elaine and back. Even during the Trolloc Wars, women failed their tests, or lacked the strength, or were sent away from the Tower for any of the usual reasons. Adelius had adopted a lecturing tone, but not offensively. Browns often did when expounding. Under the circumstances, it is hardly surprising that a number feared to go off into the world alone, nor that they might flee to Barashta, as the city that existed here then was called. Though the main part of Barashta was, of course, where the Rahad now stands. Not that a stone of Barashta remains. The Trolloc Wars did not truly envelop Iharon until late, but in the end Barashta fell as completely as Barsine, or Shemal, or... "The kin," Van Deen broke in gently. Adelius blinked at her, then nodded. "The kin persisted even after Barashta fell, in the same way they had before, taking in wilders and women put out of the tower." Elaine frowned. Mistress Anan had said the kin took in wilders, too, but Rihanna's biggest anxiety had seemed to be making her and Nynaeve prove they were not. "None ever remained long,"
Adelius added. 5 years, perhaps 10. Then, I suppose, as now. Once they realize that their little group is no replacement for the White Tower, they go off and become village healers or wisdoms or the like, or sometimes simply forget the power, stop channeling and take up a craft or trade. In any case, they vanish, so to speak. Elaine wondered how anyone could forget the one power that way. The urge to channel, the temptation of the source, was always there, once you learned how. Aes Sedai did seem to believe some women could just put it behind them, though, once they found out they would not be Aes Sedai. Van Deen took up the explanation again. The sisters frequently spoke almost in alternating sentences, each carrying on smoothly where the other left off. The tower has known of the kin from nearly the beginning, perhaps from the very beginning. At first, no doubt, the wars took precedence, and despite calling themselves the kin, they have done just what we want such women to do. They remain hidden. Even the fact that they can channel, draw no attention whatsoever to themselves. Over the years, they've even passed along word, secretly, of course, carefully, when one of them found a woman falsely claiming the shawl. You said something? Elaine shook her head. Kariana, is there any tea in that pot? Kariana gave a small start. I think Adelius and Van Deen might like to wet their throats. The Damani woman did not quite look at a still-staring Marilla before going to the table where the silver teapot and cups were. "That doesn't explain why," Elaine went on. "Why is knowledge of them such a deep secret? Why haven't they been scattered long ago?" "Why, the runaways, of course." Adelius made it sound the most obvious thing in the world. It is a fact that other gatherings have been broken up as soon as found, the last about 200 years ago, but the kin do keep themselves small and quiet. That last group called themselves the Daughters of Silence, yet they were hardly silent. Only 23 of them altogether, wilders gathered and trained after a fashion by a pair of former accepted, but they... Runaways, Elaine prompted, taking a cup from Kariana with a smile of thanks. She had not asked one for herself, but she realized absently that the woman had offered her the first. Van Deen and her sister had talked quite a bit about runaways on the way to Ebu Dar. Adelius blinked and pulled herself back to the topic. The kin help runaways. They always have 2 or 3 women in Tar Valon keeping watch. For one thing, they approach almost every woman put out in a very circumspect way, and for another, they manage to find every runaway, whether novice or accepted. At least none has made it off the island without their help since the Trolloc Wars. Oh, yes, Van Deen said as Adelius paused to take a cup from Kariana. It had been offered to Marilla first, but Marilla sat slumped and staring bleakly at nothing. If anyone does manage to escape, why, we know right where to look, and she nearly always ends up back in the tower wishing her feet had never itched. As long as the kin don't know we know, anyway. Once that happens, it will be back to the days before the kin, when a woman running from the tower might go in any direction. The numbers were larger then. Aes Sedai, accepted, novices and runaways. And some years, 2 out of 3 escaped clean, others 3 out of 4. Using the kin, we retake at least 9 of 10. You can see why the tower has preserved the kin and their secret like precious jewels. Elaine could. A woman was not done with the White Tower until it was done with her. Besides, it could not hurt the tower's reputation for infallibility that it always caught runaways. Almost always. Well, now she knew. She stood, and to her astonishment, Adelius did also, and Van Deen, waving away Kariana's offered tea, and Saritha. Even Marilla, after a moment. They all looked at her expectantly, even Marilla. Van Deen noticed her surprise and smiled. Another thing you might not know. We are a contentious lot in many ways, we Aes Sedai. Each jealous of her place and prerogatives. But when someone is placed above us or stands above us, we tend to follow her fairly meekly for the most part.
however we might grumble about her decisions in private.
"Why, so we do," Adelais murmured happily, as if she had just discovered something.
Marilla took a deep breath, absorbing herself for a moment in straightening her skirts.
"Van Deen is right," she said. "You stand above us in yourself, and I must admit you apparently have been placed above us. If our behavior calls for penance, well, you will tell us if it does. Where are we to follow you, if I may ask?"
There was no sarcasm in any of that. If anything, her tone was more polite than Elaine had heard out of her before. She thought any Aes Sedai who ever lived would have been proud to control her features as well as she did right then. All she had wanted was for them to admit she really was Aes Sedai. She fought a momentary urge to protest that she was too young, too inexperienced.
"You can never put honey back in the comb," so Lini used to say when she was a girl. Egwene was no older.
Drawing breath, she smiled warmly. "The first thing to recall is that we are all sisters, in every meaning of the word. We must work together. The Bowl of the Winds is too important for anything less." She hoped they would all nod so enthusiastically when she told them what Egwene intended.
"Perhaps we should sit again."
They waited for her before folding themselves back into their seats. She hoped Nynaeve was getting on a tenth so well. When she found out about this, Nynaeve was going to faint from shock.
"I have something of my own to tell you about the kin."
Fairly soon it was Marilla who looked ready to faint from shock, and even Adelais and Van Deen were not far from it. But they went right on saying, "Yes, Elaine, and if you say so, Elaine." Perhaps it would all go smoothly from now on. The sedan chair was rocking through the crowds of revelers along the quay when Mogedion spotted the woman. She was being handed down from a coach at one of the boat landings by a footman in green and white. A wide feathered mask covered her face more completely than Mogedion's did, but she would have known that determined stride, known that woman, from any angle in any light. The carved screens that served as windows in the closed chair were certainly no hindrance. Two fellows with swords on their hips scrambled from the coach roof to follow the masked woman. Mogedion thumped a fist against the side of the chair, shouting, "Stop!" The bearers halted so quickly she was almost flung forward. The crowd jostled past, some shouting curses at her bearers for blocking the way, some shouting more good-naturedly. Down here by the river, the throng ran thin enough for her to watch through the gaps. The boat that pulled away from the landing seemed quite distinctive. The roof of the low cabin in the rear was painted red. She did not see that affectation on any of the others waiting at the long stone dock. She wet her lips, shivering. Moradin's instructions had been explicit, the price of disobedience made excruciatingly clear. But a slight delay would not hurt. Not if he never learned of it, anyway. Flinging open the door, she climbed out into the street and looked about hastily. There, that inn, right overlooking the docks, and the river. Lifting her skirts, she hurried away without the slightest fear anyone might hire her chair. Until she untied the webs of compulsion on them, the bearers would tell anyone who asked that they were engaged, and stand there until they died of hunger. A path opened ahead of her, men and women in feathered masks leaping aside before she reached them, leaping with squeals and cries as they clutched where they thought they had been stabbed. As they had. There was no time to spin subtle webs on so many minds, but a flurry of needles woven of air did as well here. The stout innkeeper at the oarsman's pride nearly leaped, too, at the sight of Mogedion striding into her common room in gloriously scarlet silk, worked with thread of gold, and black silk that glistened as richly as the gold. Her mask was a great spray of pitch-black feathers with a sharp black beak, a raven. That was Moradin's joke, his command, as was the dress, in fact. His colors were black and red, he said, and she would wear them while she served him. She was in livery, however elegant, and she could have killed everyone who saw her. Instead, she spun a hasty web on the round-cheeked innkeeper that jerked her up straight,
and made her eyes pop. No time for subtlety. At Mogedion's command to show her the roof, the woman ran up the railless stairs at the side of the room. It was unlikely any of the feather-draped drinkers saw anything unusual in the innkeeper's behavior, Mogedion thought with a small laugh. The oarsman's pride probably had never seen a patron of her quality before. On the flat roof, she quickly weighed the dangers of letting the innkeeper live versus those of killing her. Corpses had a way of pointing a finger eventually. If you wished to remain quietly hidden in the shadows, you did not kill unless you absolutely had to. Hastily, she adjusted the web of compulsion, told the woman to go down to her room, to go to sleep, and forget ever having seen her. With the haste, it was possible the innkeeper might lose the whole day, or wake somewhat slower of wits than she had been. So much in Mogedion's life would have been so much easier had she possessed a better talent for compulsion. But in any case, the woman scurried away, eager to obey, and left her alone. As the door thumped down flat into the dirty white-tiled roof, Mogedion gasped at the sudden feel of fingers stroking her mind, palping her soul. Moradin did that sometimes. A reminder, he said, as if she needed any more. She almost looked around for him. Her skin pebbled as though at a sudden icy breeze. The touch vanished, and she shivered again. Coming or going, it did remind her. Moradin himself could appear anywhere at any time. Haste. Speeding to the low wall that surrounded the roof, she searched the river spread out below. Scores of boats of every size swept along on their oars between larger vessels, anchored or under sail. Most of the cabins of the sort she sought were plain wood, but there she saw a yellow roof, and there a blue, and there, in mid-river and heading southward fast, red. It had to be the right one. She could not take any more time here. She raised her hands, but as balefire launched itself, something flashed around her and she jerked. Moradin had come. He was here, and he would... She stared at the pigeons fluttering away. Pigeons. She nearly spewed the contents of her stomach across the roof. A glance at the river made her snarl. Because she had jerked, the balefire she meant to slice through cabin and passenger instead had sliced diagonally through the middle of the boat, about where the oarsmen had stood and the bodyguards. Because the rowers had been burned out of the pattern before the balefire struck, the two halves of the craft were now a good 100 paces back up the river. Then again, perhaps it was not a complete disaster, because that slice from the boat's center had gone at the same time the boatmen really died. The river had had minutes to rush in. The two parts of the boat sank out of sight in a great froth of bubbles, even as her eyes shifted to them, carrying their passenger to the depths. Suddenly what she had done struck her. She had always moved in the dim places, always kept herself hidden, always... Any woman in the city who could channel would know someone had drawn a great deal of Sidar, if not for what, and any eye watching had seen that bar of liquid white fire sear across the afternoon. Fear gave her wings. Not fear. Terror. Gathering her skirts, she ran back down the stairs, ran through the common room, bumping into tables and careering off people trying to get out her way, ran into the street too frightened to think, battering a path through the crowd with her hands. "Run!" she shrieked, hurling herself into the sedan chair. Her skirts caught in the door, she ripped them free. "Run!" The bearers flung themselves into motion, tossing her about, but she did not care. She braced herself with fingers laced through the carved wooden screens and shook uncontrollably. He had not forbidden this. He might forgive or even ignore her independent action here, if she carried out his instructions swiftly, efficiently. That was her only hope. She was going to make Phelion and Ispan crawl.